Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk and to this edition of Men's Monday on Mind Talk. Many of you know that every Monday you and I have an opportunity to meet another man and to hear about his life, sort of walk with him through his journey. And today is no different. I am very pleased to introduce to you Joel Helfer. Joel has had a varied career. Joel, it is delightful to welcome you to Mind Talk.
Thank you, Pamela. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Joel, as you and I talked just a bit ago, I really would like to start with little Joel. Tell me about who he was and your growing up, your early days, and your early experiences with family and friends.
Well, from the earliest I can remember, my parents bought a two-flat in Skokie, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. And the reason they bought it is because they needed some funds at the time. And my aunt, uncle, and grandmother lived on the second floor. So the entire family lived together, and they all were in business together. We were in the construction business. We were in the commercial glass and glazing our whole lives. So probably from the time I can remember, I had what you call two sets of parents.
What was that like? I mean, for some people that could be a wonderful thing, and for other people, you know, one parent was enough. Certainly two sets would be more than a challenge. What was your experience?
Well, it was a good thing because I was very young and I didn't really know the difference. And I got along very well with my uncle and aunt and grandmother, who came from Kiev in Russia and didn't speak English very well. She spoke Yiddish. So at a young age, I learned a second language almost before I learned to speak English. My parents were my primary motivators and who I followed. But it was good to have another set of parents because there was always somebody to do something with. And I got an awful lot of attention, and I got an awful lot of self-confidence. But on the downside, it used to drive my mother nuts because she really didn't want, particularly her mother, to interfere in the rearing of me at a young age. So it was quite an interesting time in our lives.
I can just imagine. Tell me what kinds of things and you used to do as a little one. Your family was working together and working for themselves. It sounds like almost from your birth. Is that the case?
Before my birth.
Before your birth.
Because my grandfather, his name was Joseph, who I'm named after, started a glass business around the turn of the century. And he ran it, met my grandmother, and they got married. My grandmother had a literal Cinderella story where she was being raised by an aunt in Kiev, Russia, and they were treating her like a servant. So at age 14, she somehow managed to leave that situation, work her way to Moscow. From Moscow, she worked her way to somewhere in England, and then got on a boat and ended up in the United States at 14 years old with no education and not being able to speak a word of English. So that's quite a story.
That's extraordinary. And just the resilience and the creativity it would take for her to do that. You know, I mean, certainly you know there are adults who would have a hard time with all of that, negotiating all those things.
She met my grandfather, and they got married. And he had a little business at the time. He had a small glass business. Actually, he started out as a driver for a glass company, but in those days, a driver drove a horse and wagon. To show you how far back I'm going, that's how they delivered glass.
When you say glass, do you mean large sheets of glass or glassware? What was the glass
business? I'm talking
business?
About large sheets of glass and mirrors that go in buildings and homes. It's, you know, actual windows that you look out of, mirrors that you look out of, and all the related products. But in those days, they primarily just had two products, a piece of glass that went in a window for a store or home, in a mirror. And the company my grandfather worked for was in the mirror business. So when he got married, he went to his boss and he said to him, I'm making $2 a week, but now that I'm married, I need to give my wife the $2 a week. And he had a bad habit. He used to like to play poker. So he asked his boss for a 50-cent raise so he could play his poker games. And the boss says, I'm not giving you 50 cents. You're crazy. So for 50 cents, he quit. And he got two of his buddies, and they went into business for themselves, which started a three-generation business that ended up somewhere in the $6 to $7 million range.
So clearly you come from a long line of entrepreneurs and truly people with an extraordinary amount of resilience and courage.
Yeah, so that's my background. And my father and uncle were both very good businessmen. They were both in the Army during World War II. And then after they got out of the service, my father's family was originally pharmacists, and his two brothers were in the pharmacy business. And my father had gone to pharmacy school, but never finished. He had 1 year to finish, but thought was going to be drafted, so never went back. And he ended up getting drafted, but he never went to finish being a pharmacist. And after he got out of the service, he went to work for his brothers in a pharmacy, but they were paying him like $8 or $9 a week. And my mother, with her father and actually my grand with her brother Albert, had a better business, and she said, why don't you stop being in the pharmacy business, and instead of making $9 a week, you can make $25-$30 a week in the glass business. It was a better business. So he reluctantly did that, and that changed the history of our whole family and the history of my life.
You know, I'm struck by the detail with which you were able to recount family history. There are so many people who don't know what their family history is. Do you find that that is important to really know where your grandparents and their parents came from and what they did? Is that helpful to you in any way?
It's helpful to me in lots of ways because, first of all, whenever I have a problem, even to this day, the first thing I'll say to myself is, what would my grandfather do, or what would my father do, or what would my mother do in this situation? And I knew them so well, and they're, for the most part, their decisions were good. So when I can't figure out what to do, I just figure out, well, what would they do? And I do what I think they would do, and it usually works out. So the question to that is, it's extremely valuable, plus it's extremely fun, and it's nice to be able to pass that information on to my children so they know the whole heritage of how our family started out. So it's got very few disadvantages. Plus, when I meet people on the street, you know, who had similar backgrounds or similar parents or something, there's something in common to talk about right from the beginning.
Again, I think it's important to underscore how important availing oneself of family history can be if one is able to do that. Tell me about your teenage years and going into a young adult. Were you pretty clear that you were going to be working in the family business? Did you have any aspirations outside of that?
Well, everybody thought I was going to go directly into the family business. As a matter of fact, we used to kid people that I used to learn the family business at the kitchen table every night at dinner. My father would come home and tell stories. So theoretically, I was in business from the time I can remember, like 8 or 10 years old. But when I went to high school, I picked up a sport called golf. And I became very good at it. And it's interesting how I became good at it. But my uncle bought a set of golf clubs, and we lived in a two-flat. And in the backyard one day, he went out and he started practicing because he was going to go out and play. And unfortunately, there was a neighbor named Billy Schneer who had come out to watch my uncle play, and he got too close to him. And when my uncle took a backswing with the golf club, he hit this kid in the chin and knocked him out.
Oh, my.
So this poor kid was taken to the hospital. My uncle felt terrible. He ended up getting, fortunately, he wasn't hurt too bad. He could have really got hurt, but he wasn't. He had some stitches, and in those days, you just paid the hospital bills. You know, there was no insurance or nothing like that. You just paid the hospital bills, and he never picked up a golf club again. And the brand new set of golf clubs was sitting in the basement for about a year, and I said to him, I says, Uncle Albert, do you mind if I go out and try this sport out, see if it's any good? He says, no. He says, go ahead. I'm never hitting a golf ball again. He was so upset that he hurt this neighbor's kid. And I ended up becoming what I felt was very good. I played in some tournaments in high school, and I played in some amateur tournaments, and I actually took off a whole summer to see how good I could get, which was, like, in my family, sacrilegious, because we always worked, right? And for me to take off a summer to play golf was, like, unheard of, but I did it anyways.
I can only imagine.
It took a lot of courage for me to tell my father, I'm not coming to work this summer, you know, and the glass is I'm going to play golf because I want to see how good I can get. And I got very good at it, but not good enough to make a career out of it. I imagine if I would have had a different set of parents, not that there's anything wrong with them, who were more interested or had more of a sports background, that could have ended up becoming a career for me. But as it was, I decided that I would be better off being in the family business, and golf became like my main hobby throughout my whole life. I used it a lot in business. I had a lot of fun with it. I still play it, you know, and so that just became my hobby. And then when I graduated from high school, I had a very nice high school career. You know, I did very well in high school, and I was a leader, and I did a lot of things. I also played soccer. And I went from high school to Washington University in St. Louis. And I picked that because my cousin was going to pharmacy school, and my parents wanted to send me, when they decided to send me away, they wanted to send me somewhere where there at least was a family member. So my cousin was going to St. Louis College of Pharmacy, so I went there for 2 years, and I was studying accounting, and I did it, unfortunately, for the wrong reasons, because I thought it would be good or something. My parents wanted me to be an accountant, but I was never cut out to be an accountant, but I got through it.
I'm glad you got through it. Joel, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to hear what you did after you got through accounting. Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. We'll be back in just a moment. Joel, you got through accounting. At what point did you go into the family business?
What happened was is I ended up graduating from the University of Illinois because the dean at Washington University eliminated the undergraduate courses. They wanted to make accounting a graduate course of study, so I had to transfer. And I graduated from Illinois, and then I decided, even though I had been in my family business most of my life every summer, I said to my dad it would be good if I worked for somebody else for at least a year or two before I went to work in the family business, just because it would be good for my rounding to work for someone else. And he agreed, and I literally put on a coat and a tie, went downtown Chicago, and went into an employment agency and gave them my record and my background and my information. And they signed me up, and they said, have a seat. And an hour later, they said, we have a job opportunity for you. And I looked at them. I was, like, amazed. And in 1 hour.
That's not bad.
Yeah, can you imagine this today? Graduating from college and getting a job in an hour?
No.
And they sent me over to a building that was owned by Blue Cross Blue Shield. And they were looking for accountants to run a new program that Blue Cross Blue Shield obtained from the government, and the program was called Medicare.
That takes us back a bit.
We're going all the way back to 1971. That's when this was. And actually what happened was the Medicare program started in around 65 or 66 with President Johnson. He instituted it. But they never did any accounting for the money that was being passed out. So for 6 years, hospitals and doctors were just billing the government, and the government was writing checks. And in 1971, when Nixon was in office, he said, you know, it's time to check this out and do some auditing. So they hired Blue Cross Blue Shield to go around and audit hospitals and doctors and the bills they were sending to the government for Medicare. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And Blue Cross Blue Shield needed an accountant. And as it turned out, they needed an accountant who happened to be Jewish.
Why?
So I got hired. Two reasons. One, I was in the right place at the right time, and I had the right background.
Why did you have to be Jewish?
I didn't find this out till later, but the government wanted a ethnic diversity with Jewish and Christian and black and white and Asian. That was part of the rules. Now, how that got done or why it was done that way, I can't tell you, but that was just the way it was.
Interesting.
And then, so I got hired, and I went there, and I had about a half an hour interview, and they liked me, and then I was dressed well, and I spoke well, and I had a big background in sales from the time I was a kid. So they gave me a job, and they say, can you start Monday? And I think this was like a Wednesday or something, like Wednesday, Thursday. So I said, okay. So I go home, and I took the elevator they have, you know, like in Chicago, it's called the L. It's an L tracks to go back. And it took me almost all the way to Skokie, and then my mom picked me up. And I came home, and she said, what happened? I says, I got a job. And she says, what? She says, in one day? And I said, yeah. She says, how did you get a job? So I told her this story, and she says, this is pretty good. She says, when do you start? And I go, Monday. So my dad came home for dinner about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and I told him the story, and he looks at me, and he says, you're okay. He says, nobody had ever heard of somebody going down, having one interview and get hired in one day, right?
Not at all. I mean, an hour to get the interview and then a half hour interview and you got a job. Amazing.
And I've been working ever since.
Amazing. Now, I don't think you didn't spend all of your years as an accountant with Blue Cross Blue Shield. What did you do at some point?
I spent 2 years doing that. And then at the end of 2 years, I decided that my best opportunity was to go back into the family business. So what I did at the end of 2 years, I could have had a nice career working for Blue Cross Blue Shield, but there were limits, and I always wanted to be in business for myself. And I knew that if I went into the family business, at some point I would be a boss, a manufacture of insulating glass. A second business, we made mirrors. And a third business, we were a union installer of glass and mirrors in buildings. So we had three businesses at the time. And the first thing my dad did is he said, okay, I want you to go out and sell glass. Just go out on the street and sell glass. And I had a car. What had happened when I graduated from college and I got this job, what I did in the 2 days is I said to my dad, I said, you know, I'm going to need a car to drive downtown. So we went to a dealer on the south side. It was a Chevrolet dealer. And I had some money saved up from working. And I bought my first brand new car. I bought a 1971 Chevrolet Malibu, and the car was $2,000 out the door.
Oh, my goodness. Those were the days.
Yeah, those were the muscle. Can you imagine buying a car for $2,000?
Not at all. Let me ask you a question. So many people will say, I've always wanted to have my own business. And there are just as many people who say, I wouldn't dream of having my own business. What was the pull for you in wanting to have your own business?
From the time I was a child, my parents were always owners of businesses. My grandparents were owners of businesses. So it was just a family thing.
Okay, it seemed like what you should do.
Yeah, and it was the way we were taught and the values we were given and the psychology and the strategies and the stories from everyday life. So it was natural to want to own a business.
So walk us through your career in the family business. Because as I understand it, you did well, but at some point you stopped.
Correct. What happened was is that we started out in the family business as salesmen, and we did all different types of things. We used to work 5.5 days a week. We used to work Monday through Friday and half a day on Saturday. That was our routine. And we did well, and our family had a good relationship in business. And my father always wanted to be a distributor, which was just selling products, which was the most profitable part of our industry. And he became a distributor about the third year I had worked for him. So we ended up with four family businesses. And by becoming a distributor, we got to know all the other glass companies in the general suburban and metropolitan area because we sold them all products. And I was a salesman going to all these different companies. And I wanted a way to distinguish ourselves as a distributor so we could get more business. So I decided one day that I was going to start an association. There never was a group or an association in the Chicago metropolitan area. This goes back in the middle 70s.
Okay.
So I just decided, I sat down at the kitchen table, and I created an association called the Illinois Glass Association. I made myself the president.
That was nice of you.
I'm in the association business. Okay. And the funny part of it is I was doing authority marketing 40 years before they even called it authority marketing, which is a big topic today.
What is authority marketing?
That's marketing where you build your authority in a niche to get more business.
I see.
Now it's a whole topic. There's a whole course on there. If you punch in authority marketing on Google, 100 different deals will come up. As a matter of fact, people use podcasts to build their authority and credibility, which is relating to what you're doing.
Interesting.
And we started this association. We invited about 50, 60 people to dinner. We gave them a card, a membership card, and we said, you're all now members of a free association. And really what it was another way for us to subtly advertise our business by doing a good thing for the community, the glass community. And everybody enjoyed it because most of these people had never met each other before. They talked to them on the phone, but they never had a chance to meet socially.
Interesting.
And this little group ended up going from about 40 or 50 members to about 200 members, and we ran it for almost 20 years. And it was the best thing we ever did for our business. And all we did was provide opportunities to get together. We had golf outings, dinner dances for the women, monthly meetings. We passed out information. We had suppliers and experts come to talk to them. And it was a really good way of distinguishing ourselves as leaders in our industry.
It sounds like it. Sounds like it did a lot of good things for a lot of people. And it was another one of your creations.
Right. And then about 10, 12 years into it, one of our customers who we were selling products to was named Costello Glass, retired. He was an older gentleman named Warren Downey, and he came to my father and he said, my father's name was Herman. And he said, Herman, I'd like to sell you my business. And it was a little business downtown, you know, very small in relation to our business. So my dad looked at him and he went over it and we talked about it. And he said to me, this might be a good opportunity for you because it would have given me my first chance to run a complete business by myself. So we bought the business and for a small amount of money. And we came back, and my uncle said, who's going to run it? And I said, I am. And he says, what do you know about running a business? And I says, well, we'll find out, won't we?
Now, how old were you at that point?
I was about 30 years old.
Okay. All right.
So I had a lot of business experience, but never enough, you know, for my uncle, who was a tough cookie. And we went downtown, and we started to run a business, and we literally took that business from nothing and built it into a business where we ran it for about 30 years. And my brother, who was also in the accounting business, came to work with me after about 6 months. And the two of us just used the combination of our business skills, our relationship with our family, all of the contacts we had made in the industry, and just good old-fashioned, you know, good judgment to build a business. We became the number one contractor in the downtown area for inside work. We decided to specialize in only doing work inside the building, much easier than doing work outside the buildings.
Interesting.
Much safer.
Speaking of work, it sounds like you've got some work going on where you are now.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. In the background?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Is there a project afoot?
No, what's happening is I apologize for that. I try to find a nice quiet place, but the gardener is outside cutting the grass, so I didn't know.
I see. All right, so outdoor work.
I hope that won't interfere with sound quality.
Not at all.
Because I try real, find a nice quiet place, close the door, nobody bothers me. So, oh, well, that's life, right?
That's life, and at least we know what it is.
But anyways, we really did a nice job of finding a niche, and we took that niche and developed it, and we used basic principles of business. We always believed in giving people more than they paid for, and it was very important to us that we made a promise that we kept it. And another thing we did is we always answered our own telephones. We were always available to answer our own telephones. And people used to kid us like, you're not there to answer your phone. And I said, yeah, I am. Or I had a service that could connect me if I was out. And I said, if you call me, I'll answer the phone. And at this point, we were doing a lot of business, and people used to call me up just to challenge me. And I said, hello, this is Joel. Can I help you? And the guy would say, you really do answer your own telephone? And I said, we do. I said, the most important thing to us is our customers. You know, I don't want to let anybody else answer the phone because they want to be able to take care of whatever you need or solve your problem immediately. And that was we weren't always there, you know, sometimes we were out.
Sure.
We had secretaries and everything. But for the most part, I'm sorry about the background, but for the most part, we answered our own phones. And we were in business up until about 10 years ago. And the only reason we decided to close our business, everybody thought we were nuts when we did because we were at the pinnacle. We were doing very well. We had money in the bank and a good reputation and very good business and very good employees. But what happened was is that the unions, we were a union glass and glazing company, and the unions kept increasing their demands for wages and benefits. And it got to a point where we were working for our employees.
Interesting.
And I looked down the road and I said, at this rate, the cost of having union men on the street at that point when we closed our business, an average union glazer with wages and benefits was getting $125,000 a year.
My word. I had no idea.
And at that rate, I said, in 4 or 5 years, they're going to put us out of business. So we're ahead of the game. We have money in the bank. We have a good reputation. We can pay all our bills, walk away clean. And that's what we did. And when we did, it was right after 2001, but business was still good in Chicago. And everybody was doing real good. And when we closed our business, everybody thought we were out of our minds, right? Well, 3 years later, we went from dummies to geniuses. Because 3 years later,
yes,
the economy went to hell, you know?
Well, what did you do after you said you closed your business? You said you were able, you had money in the bank, you could pay your bills, so you closed your business and you retired early and you just sort of went home and hung out, yes?
Yes and no.
Okay.
What I did is I was too active, you know, and I did some consulting work. I worked for some companies for a while in the glass business. And then I hung out, and then I decided I'm going to try this computer business, right? And I made the both the benefit and the mistake of thinking, buying into the myth that you can just turn on a computer and money comes out of the screen, right?
Yeah,
so
that doesn't work.
Huh?
That doesn't work.
No. So I went on this journey for about 4 or 5 years, and it cost me quite a bit of money. And finally, I learned how to find something that actually made me money, and it was very incidental and coincidental what happened. I joined a group of these authority marketers, which were people who used authority to build their businesses. And one of the reason I liked it is because I had been doing it all my life, but I never knew there was a course of study and a jargon and terminology and everything else. I mean, I had been doing all this stuff like, you know, they used to teach you that if you want to build your authority, you give yourself a title and you work it, right? Well, that's what I did all those years ago when I made myself president of this glass association, right? So I had been doing this all my life. So when I found out about this, this was like right up my alley, and I knew exactly what to do.
So you were almost an authority on authority marketing.
Without even realizing it.
We're going to take a break, and we will come right back and pick it up here. Folks, you are listening to Mind Talk. I'm Pamela Brewer, having a conversation with Joel Helfer, who's had a varied career in many things, and we'll hear about the rest of his career when we come back. Joel, so here you are. You are an authority with Authority Marketers. What's your next career path?
Well, what happened was is I had a little bump in the road that about 3 years ago I had some health challenges. And they took me to the emergency room, and I just had some problems with, let's put it this way, with my plumbing. Let's believe that description.
Okay.
They said if I didn't come into the hospital that day, that would have been my last day on Earth. So thank God I came in.
Indeed.
And they had to do some corrective surgery, and I ended up spending over 100 days in a nursing home
to
recover. And the sad part of that is while that happened, two of my children graduated from college, and I wasn't able to attend their college graduation, so that was kind of a bitter pill to swallow. But
For the entire family.
Yeah, correct. But I learned a lot in that being in the hospital for 100 days, because I literally had to learn how to do everything all over again, get dressed, put my clothes on, get in and out of bed. It was quite a challenge in your 60s. And that kind of mellowed me a little bit. And now that's pretty much behind me. I've pretty much recovered from all that. But what happened was is I wasn't done yet. As a matter of fact, it gave me even more determination to do something with my life. Because I figured if I still had a chance, the man upstairs gave me another chance, I better see what else I could do. So I joined this group of authority marketers, and I wrote a few articles about authority marketing and my background. They interviewed me about what I did, and a guy named Mark Imperial, who was a talk show host on a live radio show in Chicago on a station called WIND, which was a popular show, 5:60 a.m. in Chicago, was listening to me, and he calls me up one day, and he says, "Can you help me?" And I says, "Maybe." I says, "What do you want me to do?" He says, "I'm having a hard time getting guests for my radio show, and I need someone who can jump on the phone and find guests for my radio show. You might get a kick out of this." So I says, "Well," I says, "I'll give it a shot." He says, "If you do, I'll make you my radio producer." And I go, "Oh, I get a new title.
Yeah,
I like that.
Not so bad."
I says, "Now I'm a producer, right?" Which made me a little bit unique as opposed to all these other guys trying authority marketing. So we ended up coming up with an automated system of getting guests using LinkedIn. And that worked well for about 2 years. And I learned a lot about radio and radio guests. And like now I got a nickname, I give myself the name of the 10-minute radio producer, because I had to do pretty much what you did for me, is prep the guests in 10 minutes or less. When you can, without going into the details, you can appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And now what I do is, first of all, I started out, I researched the market, and there are about 6 or 7 companies and individuals that coach and train people how to be good and great guests on the radio. But I niched it down one step further. Rather than do that, I decided that the most interesting thing to me, because of my life background, was how to take these radio interviews and make money with them. And I just started a new venture called Radio Guest Stars, where I actually help people learn how to get a radio interview and then repurpose it to ring the register, which is a lot of fun.
So,
and to the best of my knowledge, there aren't too many people doing that.
Now, let me ask you this, because, again, what I hear repeatedly throughout your life is a lot of belief in yourself, a lot of energy, a lot of creativity, and it's. I don't hear anywhere where you said to yourself, "You know, I was afraid I wouldn't make it, so I kind of sat around on it for a while." What I hear is a continual moving forward. Is that what your life has been like?
Pretty much. You know, there are times when you say to yourself, "You know, can I make this work?" And then I say to myself, "I said, let's just do it." You know, worst it happens, it doesn't work out, and I try something else. I've been blessed with a very positive mental attitude. I think I learned that. I give it something worked out. And that I've been able to pass that along to my children and my wife to a degree, which I think is probably my greatest skill, is the fact that I just have a positive mental attitude. It started at a young age because what happened was is my father had some books in the basement, and one of them was a book by a guy named W. Clement Stone, who was in the insurance business, and he wrote this book, Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. And I read this book when I was maybe 13 or 14 years old, and I really liked the book. It's a classic book, as a matter of fact. It's still available today. So I didn't know any better. I didn't know that you weren't supposed to call very, you know, important people up, right? And he had a business in Chicago called Combined Insurance. So I picked up the phone and I says, I want to talk to Mr. Stone. And they say, who are you? And I says, I read his book and I really liked it. So the secretary says, you sound like you're a kid. How old are you? And I said, I'm 14. She says, you're 14 and you're calling this guy up? I said, yeah, why not?
The phone
so
was
says,
there.
Hold on a minute. So like I wait about 4 or 5 minutes and, hello, this is Mr. Stone. Can I help you, right? So I introduced myself and I told him who I was. And I told him I was going to junior high school at the time. And I said, my father gave me your book. And I just wanted to tell you I liked reading it. It was really good and it's going to help me throughout my life. I just wanted to thank you for writing it. That was the whole conversation. He says, you're calling me up just to tell me you read my book and you liked it? I said, yep. He says, how old are you? I go, 14. He goes, He said, what's your address? So I gave him my address, and about a week later, I got a package in the mail with every book he ever wrote, including the books by Napoleon Hill and all that stuff, all these success books. So at a very young age, I read all this stuff, and I pretty much followed their formula for my whole life.
For those who are listening who perhaps want to start their own business or just want to branch out and do something different, and perhaps there are some fears or some concerns holding them back, particularly with the way the economy seems to go these days, what would you say to them?
I would tell them two things. One, to pick out the one skill they have that they're very good at that they enjoy. Because usually if you have a skill that you're very good at, that you enjoy, that can promote some type of value, whatever that is, to other people. And then I would tell them to try to find a gap in the marketplace or maybe go to work for someone in the same business for a while to see if you can, you know, impart value to other people. But I would just tell them, just not to be afraid, because life's too short. I mean, we're talking about when I was 12. I'm 68 now. It goes by quick. So there's no reason to worry about making a mistake. And the way I look at it is you only fail when you stop trying.
You stop trying.
That's just my attitude of life. As long as you stay in the game and you keep going up to the plate to swing the bat, sooner or later you're going to get a hit. And that's pretty much how it worked. And in the construction business, there was a lot of rejection because we would send out 8 or 10 proposals to get one order. So that was just part of my life. And I think people place too much emphasis on worrying about making a mistake. Like, I like the concept that's called imperfect action, where instead of trying to do everything perfect, just try something. If it doesn't work, try something else. And sooner or later, you find what you're good at, or you find what you like. But I think that your attitude, your mindset is 50% of it. And like I said, at a young age, I was fortunate that I got all these books. They were really good, but they're still good today. And they're classics like Napoleon Hill and W. Clement Stone. Not knowing that I was talking to this guy who was worth at the time, I don't know, $100 million, right? I'm calling this guy up, tell him I like his book, right?
You were a very polite young man.
Yeah, he got such a charge out of me, it wasn't even funny, right? And then I sent him a nice thank you note and a box of candy, you know, for sending me the books, you know. But that's really my life story, is just to keep trying until you make something work. And I've had enough successes in my life, several failures, but enough successes that I know that it ultimately work if I go back and I try to model or figure out what I did right and then just apply it to whatever I'm doing now.
So many people, as I know you know, so many people focus so much energy on what they did wrong, such that they actually scare themselves into not trying. And again, what I hear you saying is, you know, I got a lot of stuff wrong, but I got a lot of stuff right. And you learn from it, and you grow from it.
Yeah, now my greatest accomplishment is my family. I've got three grown children. And coincidentally, the latest thing we did is my wife always wanted to live in a warmer climate, so that my kids are grown. My oldest son was married a couple weeks ago, which was a lot of fun. My youngest is my daughter, who's a teacher in Chicago, and my middle son is down with us in Florida. We just moved to Florida. Like, nobody could believe it. 68 years old, I decided to pick up. We sold our house and we moved to Florida.
It's never too late, it sounds like, and you're never too old.
No, we're having a lot of fun down here, you know, and it's kind of like, I call it a permanent vacation, and I found a way to work at home and, you know, don't have to make a lot of money, but some money to pay the bills, and I haven't quite got there yet, but I will, and that's the latest chapter, and the only difficult thing we had was letting our children go out on their own. And like a lot of parents from our generation, I think we kind of overindulged them, as opposed to what my parents did with me. They made us work real hard for everything we got. And our generation kind of gave the kids a little too much, maybe, and now they're having a hard time dealing with everything because they expect a lot too fast, I think. You know what I mean?
Interesting. Interesting.
And so that's an issue, but we did the right thing by, you know, making sure they all had good careers and, you know, good values and treated people with respect. And they're all doing well on their own, so I'm, a little proud of that.
Well, you have a right.
Maybe a biased daddy, but a little proud of that.
You have a right to be a lot proud of that, because it sounds like you've got three really solid, humane human beings.
Right.
And that's so important, and a lot of people lose sight of that. I just want to go back for a moment to the health challenge that you had. You said you were in your 60s, and
yeah,
that you were in care for over 3 months.
Correct.
Again, there would be an understandable. I mean, that's a hard thing to deal with, and to be in, you know, in care in a hospital, in a rehab facility for that many days, it's understandable that a lot of people would really begin to feel depressed, to feel less connected to their lives, and to feel, quite frankly, less hopeful. But for you, it was a wake-up call to keep moving forward.
Well, some of what you said happened to me. And the way I overcame that is my wife took a bunch of pictures of my whole family and put it up on the wall. You know, all types of pictures, so they were like with me all the time. Plus, the worst part of it was the nursing home was only about 15 minutes from where I lived. But I felt like my whole life is 15 minutes away and I can't get there. So that was a real tough thing to overcome.
Of course.
And the way I overcame it was just one day at a time. I figured, okay, I'm one day closer to getting the hell out of here. And I finally did. And then I even needed a little bit of additional care when we were home. But finally we got over all that. And I think it was as hard or harder on my family than it was on me.
Well, I think it's a fair guess to say that it was hard on the entire family, including you.
Yeah, but it's part of life. What are you going to do? and I have, like, a great sense of humor. Like, I sometimes laugh at myself. It's like, you know, the joke, one step forward and two steps back, you know. And that's pretty much what it was. And I said, well, I said, here's another challenge. But the way I looked at it is I was still alive. I was still part of the planet, right?
Absolutely.
So that was a positive thing. And I drew on that because the opposite situation wouldn't have been too good, you know.
Not so much. Joel, as we close out our conversation today, if anyone would like to get in touch with you or talk to you, is there a website that might be available or no?
Yes. Well, they can get me on LinkedIn. They can just Google my name, Joel Helfer. I'm all over the place.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, if they put in the term iTunes-Joel Helfer, it's amazing what comes up. And I'm in the process of building a new website called joelhelfer.com. Plus, on iTunes and on Google, I've got a best-selling book that I wrote about business. So there's a lot of ways to get a hold of me that way. Just by punching my name into Google, I'm all over the place.
Sounds
Joel,
good.
Joel, H-E-L-F-E-R. Or, if you want to talk to me, I still answer my phones. I'm at 407-656-2520.
All right. You've given out your phone number now.
That's okay.
Okay.
Because I find the majority of people who I talk to are very positive and upbeat.
Wonderful.
And I don't mind at all.
Thank you so much for sharing your life with us today. It really has been quite a wonderful journey that you've been on and continue to be on.
Thank you, Pamela, for the opportunity. I hope your listeners got a little fun and entertainment about this in Maryland and all over the country. And I enjoyed talking to you very much.
Well, hopefully we will have you back again sometime soon.
Thanks a lot. I hope you have a nice day.
All righty. You take care. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you'd like to be in touch with me directly, you can always send an email to Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org, and that's mindtalk.org. Mind Talk is available to you on demand, so if you really like this conversation and you want to hear it again, all you have to do is go to mindtalk, mindtalk.org, look for Men's Monday, and there it will be. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then that's what it is, unacceptable. You take care.